You are listening to BensTorah.com.
One of the more important Mar Makomos in Hilchos Shabbos is a Machlokas Rashash and Minchas Chinuch about the Malacha of Zoreya. Right? When you go through the Malachas of Shabbos, you don't think of Zoreya as being like the most critical Malacha, as being something that's so lemaisa in a society like ours, where not so many of us are farmers. But there's a very sodistic machlokas that comes up, and that is the following. The nature of planting is that when you put seeds in the ground, it takes a while for it to grow. So clearly, the malacha on Shabbos is to put seeds in the ground, right? The malacha is not to see the flower come out. It takes a long time for anything to come out of the ground. So the nature of the malacha is that you're putting the seeds in the ground, but you're putting it in a place where it can eventually grow, where ultimately it will have the capacity to grow. If you put seeds between two rocks and it doesn't have the ability to grow, you do not violate the malacha of Zoreya. But the very nature of it is that the result of the malacha cannot happen, pretty much cannot happen on Shabbos. In fact, that's what they say, the Brach in Shmon Esrei, that's about Mashiach, is Es Tzemach David, because throughout Tanakh, Mashiach is always referred to as Tzemach. And so I think the Bali Machshava say that the reason Mashiach is referred to as Tzemach is because the way that Geula happens is similar to Tzmicha. It's similar to the way that that a plant works. That first of all, there's a lot happening beneath the surface that you do not see. That a lot of times people don't realize that the wheels are already in motion, that Geula is turning. We got to have a little bit of a Yom Yerushalayim connection today. That the wheels of Geula are already turning, and sometimes you're not able to see it until after the fact. Second of all, it happens slowly. It doesn't necessarily happen in one moment. Meaning we always had this vision of Geula being like a moment where it's just wings of eagles are going to come and take us away. But maybe it happens a little more slowly. Maybe the Ribbono Shel'olam's plan is that it happens like a smicha. And third, that we're only going to really be able to appreciate the entire process in retrospect. Meaning after the plant comes out, you say, oh, now I see what was really happening the whole time that I wasn't able to recognize. I try when I daven Shmon Esrei, in the Brach of Es Tzemach, the word Tzemach appears three times. So I try to think of one of those in Yanim each time I say the word Tzemach. It focuses me a little bit better to be able to think the first time Es Tzemach, that there's a lot that happens beneath the surface that we're not able to appreciate. Mehera Tatzmiach, that it should happen quickly, even though the nature of Tzmicha is that it's slow. And then at the end of the Bracha, to think about how we're going to look back retrospectively and appreciate the entire Tzmicha. The Malacha of Zoreya, going back to Halacha, the Malacha of Zoreya, by its very nature, nothing happens immediately. So let me ask you a question. What happens if you put a seed in the ground on Shabbos, and then you realize, Oyvei, what did I do? I don't want to be Mechal Shabbos. So you rip it out of the ground. You're not even after Shabbos, let's say. So nothing's ever going to grow from what you put in the ground. Did you violate the Malacha of Zoreya or not? Machlokas, right? I mean, you can't get this one wrong, right? This is Machlokas Rashash, and it's Machlokas Rashash and Minchas Chinuch. What's the basis of the Machlokas? Do we have any Maramakomos to be poshet this Safek? So the best Maramakom, and both Rashash and Minchas Chinuch hold... both Rosh Hashanah and Minchas Chinuch say the only maramakom really is about baking, because the Gemara talks about if you put dough in an oven on Shabbos, so there's an issur d'rabbanan called Radiyas Hapas, to take the dough out of the oven. The way they used to bake is not by having a baking tin where they put the dough in the baking tin in the oven. They would wrap the dough around the cylinder shape of the oven, then they would have to scrape it off. It was a whole asek to remove the dough from the oven. So they made an issur d'rabbanan called Radiyas Hapas. So the Gemara discusses, the Gemara says, well, if I put dough in the oven, and before it bakes, before anything happens, while it's still raw, I want to do tshuva, I realize that I'm about to violate Melach D'Oraisa of Ofer when I put the dough in the oven, so maybe I should violate the Yisra D'Rabbanan of Radiyas Hapas to save myself from the Melach D'Oraisa. And the Gemara says, yes, that works. You save yourself the Melach D'Oraisa. The only shaila is, if someone else puts dough in the oven, should I go and violate the Yisra D'Rabbanan of Radiyas Hapas in order to prevent him from violating Malacha D'Oraisa? Is it worth me violating a lesser Isser of Radiyas Hapas so that he doesn't violate a Malacha D'Oraisa? So that's the question of Einom L'Adam Chatei Kidei Shizka Chavircha, that we typically don't tell a person to do an Aveira just so that somebody else should be able to benefit. Rav Asher Weiss has an analysis of the Rishonim on this on this sugya in the following context. He was asked by Hatzalah members. Sometimes when there's a Hatzalah call, a lot of people respond. A lot of Hatzalah members, Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of volunteers that drop everything and are willing to go. And especially if it's during the Rabbi's drasha. So if there's a call that goes out, so half the shul empties out, everyone runs. So the first guy to get there shows up and he sees a kid stubbed his toe. That it wasn't pikuach nefesh. So the shaila is, he knows that there are five other Hatzalah guys on their way. They're about to get in their car. They're coming. They're all going to be mechal Shabbos. And he sees that it's not pikuach nefesh, it's not even close to pikuach nefesh. He has two options. One is to wait till they all come and then say, okay, now let's go home. Or the other option is get on the radio and say, stand down. No one should come because there's no reason to be mechal Shabbos. So Rav Asher Weiss has an interesting analysis of the sugya of chatei kadesh yizka chavircha. It's an iser kal to get on the radio. It's an iser drabanan. Driving a car, every time you hit the gas pedal, it's a malacha d'oraisa. Probably the brakes also, but certainly the gas pedal is a malacha d'oraisa. So it's an iser chamur to be driving a car. Maybe a Tesla is different. An electric car, now there are other electric cars also. I drive electric also, but it's because it was the cheapest lease. It was, so electric car may be different, but it's a malacha d'oraisa in a regular car with a gas engine every single time you hit the pedal. So that's a question in Poskim, what the best thing to do is, and it involves an analysis of the Rashba and Tosfos on that sugya. But what you do see clearly from that sugya is that the malacha d'oraisa of Ofer, even after you did the maisa afia, after you put the dough in the oven, you could prevent it from being, you could prevent yourself from having violated the Isser by undoing it. Retroactively, you could take the dough out of the oven, then you didn't violate afia. So says the Rashash, so it must be that the same thing is true of Zorea. That if you put a seed in the ground, you could prevent yourself from having violated the Isser if you just pull the seed out of the ground and you make it not happen. Whereas the Milchas Chinuch says, no, that's a special din by Ofer. That's not a din that applies to Zorea.
You can put it in and then before.
And right, so that's basically my question. My question is, what about Kala Torakula? Right, meaning, do we have the ability that once you violated an Isser, and when it's possible, is there a way to undo it by something you do later on? Leaving aside tshuva. Tshuva, for sure, tshuva me'aven, you'll turn it into zechios, but is there a way to make it that it wasn't even, that it wasn't a ma'aseh isra at all? Even with tshuva, it will turn it into a shogeg or to a zechos or whatever, but it will turn, it happened, it was a thing. Can we make it that it's as if the isser never happened? You know, I was wondering in the opposite direction also. What about a mitzvah? Right, if you do a mitzvah, or a heter, you get a heter, and then something changes in the future, can the heter go away? Meaning, for example, if those who do Mishnah Berurah Yomi, I don't know how many people do Mishnah Berurah Yomi, I do it, but just because it keeps me learning. So we're in Siman Shinta Zayin in Or HaChaim, which is the Malacha of Tzad. So the Halacha is that if, let's say, I have my dog, I don't have a dog, but let's say nor do I have a plan of getting a dog, but let's say I have my dog chained up really well, locked, tied up somewhere in the house, and then I close the door to the house. Did I violate the malach of Seder? Certainly not. He was already trapped. He was already immobile. So when I closed the door of the house, I did not violate the malacha. Let's say after that he gets loose, and now the door has been closed. And so retroactively, do we say I violated Malach of Tzedah when I closed the door of the house? So no, certainly not. Well, why not? Meaning, in a chinami, when I closed the door, I wasn't trapping him. But it turns out that closing the door is what actually trapped him, because he would have been loose otherwise. And now, the closing the door is what trapped him. Apparently, in Lagabe certain halachos, maybe when it comes to Akula, maybe this is part of Dracha Darche Noam, V'chol Nasiv Oseh Shalom. The Gemara says, for example, that if, let's say, a man dies and he doesn't have any children, but he also doesn't have any brothers, so the woman gets a hetter to go and remarry, because she doesn't require a chalitza, because there's no brother. And then the mother-in-law says, a year later, by the way, I'm pregnant. And now, and then a baby is born. So now it's going to turn out that she violated an isra of a Yavama Lashuk when the almana got remarried. So Gemara says, Loya Ba'alamo. So what's the Loya Ba'alamo based on? So the Gemara says, that can't be, that once we give the heter, that the heter is going to go away. But what about when it comes to an Isser? Rabbi Reisman gave the following example. He said that there was a Rosh Hashanah minyan that had borrowed a Sefer Torah from his shul, from Rabbi Reisman's shul, on a 3-day Yantiv. So Rosh Hashanah, it's Lo Adu Rosh, but Rosh Hashanah could fall out on a Thursday. So Thursday, Friday, Shabbos was Rosh, Thursday, Friday was Rosh Hashanah, leading right into Shabbos. So they were having a minyan somewhere on Rosh Hashanah, and he loaned out one of the Shul Sifrei Torah for that minyan. They only needed it for Thursday, Friday. They didn't need it for Shabbos. So Reisman said he was sitting and learning in the shul on Friday afternoon, on Rosh Hashanah afternoon, the second day of Rosh Hashanah, and someone walks in with the Sefer Torah in Flatbush. Someone walks in with the Sefer Torah. And he said, what are you doing? And the guy said, well, we don't need it anymore, so I'm bringing back the Sefer Torah. He said, but it's Hotza'ah, meaning he doesn't hold the Flatbush Erev, so he said, it's Hotza'ah. How could you carry the Sefer Torah? The guy said, it's Yantif. What do you mean? It's not Shabbos. He said, but there's no tzarech at all, meaning we have enough Sefer Torah here. Shul has plenty of Sefer Torah. We don't need this Sefer Torah. So there's no tzarech whatsoever for Yantif. What's the ho'il?
Maybe somebody's going to come and
want to
look.
With that Sefer Torah, when you have 10 others. So he said, we don't need this the Sefer Torah. It's absolutely no tzarech. Now, if there was a tzarech that you needed it for Shabbos, it would be mutter. They made an erev tafshilin, so you're allowed to do achanos from Yontif to Shabbos. Fine, but we don't need the Sefer Torah. So the guy said, so use it. Meaning, so if you use that Sefer Torah on Shabbos, now it will turn out that there was a tzarech, and if there was a tzarech, then you didn't violate any. Then it was a tzarech. He didn't violate any iser. So he said, "What did you do?" He said, "Well, im lo yoi lo yazik." You know, it doesn't cost you anything to use it. You might as well. But I don't know if it works or not. Meaning, it's a shayla. Does that work? Once the person already violated tzarech at a point in time where it's a tzarech shelo tzarech, does creating a tzarech later does that change anything? Does that make it any better? Another example. I'll just give a bunch of examples. Another example. Also, Rabbi Reisman gave. He said that it was, and this was is a Hilcha Shabbos example. He said it was a Shabbos morning, and Rabbi Reisman said that he likes sweet cold wine. He's not a fancy wine drinker, so he's a Pashup Shop person. He only likes Rashi, right? So he likes only Rashi wine. So he said that all of his wine bottles were a huge mess. It must have been soon after Purim or something. Rabbis get a lot of wine bottles, so they were just like piled all over the place, and they were like a huge mess in a giant box somewhere in his garage or something. So he went and he picked out a Rashi wine to put in the fridge so that he could have it later when it's time to make Kiddush for it to be cold. So he realized, wait a second, what did I just do? I picked up a wine and he picked the wine off the shelf of many different types of wines and I put it in the fridge. He realized that it's a Bora problem because even though he chose good from bad, which you're allowed to do, but that's only if it's the altar, if it's Miyad. So he did a biyad, but it's not miyad, because it's going to be for hours later, for when he wants to have a suda. So, Nu, what's the eitzah? Maybe I should just drink right now. If I drink right now, then it will turn out that it wasn't borer. So if I could drink it right now, I could fix the problem. So he thought that maybe you should drink the wine right away, and then it will be miyad. So he said he spoke at the time to Rav David Palm, one of Rav Palm's children, I think from Toronto. Rav David is a big Talmud Chacham. They say in the Palm family, he's the one that's closest, you know, in stature to what the father was, to what Rav Palm was. And he gave two makaros as to whether it works or not. I saw in the Sefer Orchos Shabbos that he thinks it's pashut that it doesn't work. That the Orchos Shabbos was written by two people. One of them is Rav Rubin, who's the Rav of the shul in Harnof, where the Harnof massacre happened. So it became a well-known shul from that, but it should have been a well-known shul anyway, because it's a tremendous makom Torah. I once met with Rav Rubin, and they showed us what goes on in the shul. We walked into the shul at 11 o'clock at night, and the place was packed with people learning. And we said, oh, you have a kolol here? They said, no, these are the balabatim. Everyone's here learning till 11 o'clock at night. Oh, every night. It was unbelievable. So Rav Rubin wrote a sefer called Orchos Shabbos, where he goes through all of the dinim of Shabbos, from the sugyos through the Rishonim. You know, he makes it as simple. He told us it took him 30 years to write the sefer. He said that, and he had to read, and when he finished it, he read the sefer twice. once as an Ama Aretz and once as a Talmud Chacham. He wanted to make sure that everybody could benefit from the Sefer. That if I know nothing and I'm reading this Sefer, am I going to get something from it? And then, knowing what I actually do know and I read the Sefer, am I actually going to get something from it? So anyway, in Orchel Shabbos, he thinks it's a Dover Pashut, that it doesn't work. Rav Vadia brings an interesting raya. How do you ever have Hasra'a on Melechus Borer? What are you going to do? You better not do that. If you go and you take and you're borer, it's going to be melachat araisa. If you right, how do you ever have hasra? Because after all, isn't it by nature hasra suffik? Because the guy can fix it afterwards. So, meaning the definition of hasra suffik is that if I tell you you better not do this. So a real hasra is if you do it, you are definitely going to be in violation. You're definitely going to be chayiv. Hasra suffik means that even if you violate my hasra, you still might not be chayiv, right? Even if you do exactly what I told you not to do, you still might not be chayiv. So isn't it always going to be hasra suffik if you're able to fix it? That's what Vadi is right. Right, okay, maybe that depends. Right, meaning you'd be able to have hasra by Melechus Borer if you didn't have the other criteria, but from a miyad perspective, from a lialter perspective, it would always be hasra suffik. If it's a Talmud Chacham who's able to chap, that maybe you should be able to fix it. I saw in Yalkut Yosef, he has an interesting discussion of this, Another Maramakom. There is a Me'iri in Hilchos Yomtov. You know, the halacha is when you have a Yomtov that goes into Shabbos, so we have an Erev Tavshilin in order to permit preparing from Yomtov to Shabbos, cooking from Yomtov to Shabbos, right? No Chidushin over here. But the very idea that a Takanat Rabbanon of Erev Tavshilin is going to allow you to cook from Yomtov to Shabbos suggests that there's no Isra D'Oraisa to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, because if there were an Isra D'Oraisa, then Takana Erev Tavshilin, the Rabbanon should not be authorized to say, oh, do this magic trick, and now you're going to be able to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos. It must be that the whole Isra of cooking from Yom Tov to Shabbos is only D'Rabbanon. So the question is, why? Why is it only D'Rabbanon? Why is it not an Isra D'Oraisa? So there are two opinions. One opinion is the sheet of Rav Chista, it's a machlokes Rabbi Rav Chista. One opinion is that Tzorchei Shabbos nasim b'yom tov, that Shabbos is so important that you're allowed to do Tzorchei Shabbos and Yom Tov on a D'Oraisa level. It's only an Issur D'Rabbanan to begin with, and therefore they make an Erev Tavshilin, the Rabbanan Institute Erev Tavshilin, to allow you to cook on Yom Tov to Shabbos, because the whole thing was only an Issur D'Rabbanan. From a D'Oraisa perspective, wearing your D'Oraisa glasses, there's nothing wrong with cooking on Yom Tov to Shabbos. The other opinion is the sheet of Rava, which someone mentioned before, of Ha'il, that when I'm cooking on Yantav, I don't know necessarily that I'm cooking for Shabbos. I may be cooking a lot of food, and I may think it's for Shabbos, but you never know when an army of guests are going to show up. And they're going to need to eat. So they may show up on late Yom Tov afternoon, and they're going to want to eat the food right away. So it could be that every time I'm cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbos, it's really needed for Yom Tov. Lest you think that never happens. I'm sure in your own lives you've had experiences. I could think of two experiences in my life where we had way more food than we needed, and thank God we did. Meaning when your wife says when your wife cooks for an army, and you're like, why? We're just going to throw it all out. We don't need all this. Listen to her, because you never know. I had one experience. I was in my wife and I. This goes back 20 years at least, more. My wife and I were in Florida for Shabbos, so we went to buy food on Erev Shabbos, and we bought. I didn't understand why we were buying so much food. And then after our Friday night Suda, we were taking a walk outside, you know, going by the shul in Bell Harbor over there to see the beautiful shul. And we saw a family, you know, the way I picture it in my mind's eye is like, you know, schlepping along in tattered clothing. They weren't, they were fine. But we saw a family walking with four little pitzlach, four little kids that were walking. And they said, do you know where the rabbi is? Well, we don't know who the rabbi is, let alone where the rabbi is. I think the rabbi just passed away. But we don't know anything. So we said, why? What's going on? They said, well, we were driving from Boca to the Fontainebleau for Shabbos, where my parents are, and traffic was horrible. And about an hour ago, we had to pull over. And we've been walking for an hour, 2 hours, whatever it was. We've been walking since Shkia. And they were in Bell Harbor now, and they got to get all the way there. We haven't had anything to eat. We don't have anything. We're like, We got you. we have enough food for everybody. We had the whole family. We give them a whole suuda. You never know. You never know when you're going to need the food. Another time in North Woodmere, my wife and I and my kids were having a suuda Shabbos lunch. It was just the family. There's no, and we get a knock on the door, and it was the entire music group, the Maccabees, at the door. I'm like, oh, you came to serenade us? And this is like when they were big, right? So he said, oh, you came to ser-. They said, oh, we had a bar mitzvah in the neighborhood, and you know, part of the contract is they're supposed to provide us with food. They didn't. Like, we just need challah, really. We just want to be yotzei suda Shabbos. So if you just give us some wine and some challah to be, we said, we have more than wine and challah. We are able to provide it. You never know that guests might come and therefore might be. There's a me'iri that says like this. Again, it's machlokas whether we apply the principle of hoil or not. So Rabbah holds, yeah, hoil vi mekla yarchum chazilei. Rav Chista says, no, there's no din called hoil. You're cooking on Yantif for Shabbos, you're cooking on Yantif for Shabbos. You're not cooking for Yantif. It's clearly for Shabbos. And on a Doraisa level, that's Motzer, but me Rabbanan and it's Aser. According to Rav Chista, that there is no such din called hoil, what if guests actually show up? Meaning, you're not allowed to cook without the expectation of guests. Without an Erev Tavshilin, Midrabanan, there's an Isser to cook without the expectation of guests, right? You don't expect anyone to come. There's an Isser Midrabanan to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. What if you cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, and then that family from Boca passes by, or the Maccabees show up? So now it turns out all that food that you needed for, that you cooked for Shabbos is actually needed on Yontif. And all that cooking that you did was cooking for Yontif. Rav Elchanan in Kovitz Shiurim, Pesachim Os Kuf Tzadi Gimel, quotes Me'iri. De Rav Chista lo palag alehecha de lo bo'u orchin at sof hayom. Aval ilu bo'u orchin achar kach, mo de Rav Chista de pater. That Rav Chista would be mo, that if guests actually come, well, then you're going to be potter, because then it turns out that you didn't cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. So again, retroactively, it takes away the Isser. Halo Davaru, no, what a maramakom. The Me'iri could always be counted on to tell you something that you didn't expect. I'm reminded, you know, it's important to note that since we do rely on Hawil, and perhaps there's a big nafkamina between Rabban and Rav Chista, and that is why you're allowed to cook very late in the day on Yantif, when the food's not going to be ready when it's still Yantif. It's only going to be ready at the very, very end of the day. So even if guests come, it's not going to be ready for them. So you're allowed to do that. So according to Rabbah, that it's all about Ho'el v'Makloi Yorkum Chazilei, you have no heter to cook, even with an Erev Tavshilin, you have no heter to cook late in the day on Yantif. Whereas according to Rav Chista, it's Mutter. That's what Magen Avraham quotes a Chumrah, that when Yantif goes into Shabbos, you should make early Shabbos. That you should dafka make early Shabbos so that you'll know that you will have stopped cooking way before Yantif is over. I remember a couple of years ago, Rav Shechter was staying by his son, Ben Rav Shai, in Woodmere. I don't remember which Yantif it was, but it was an Erev Tavshil in Yantif, and they didn't have an early Shabbos minyan. And Rav Shechter said, Mechitez, how do you not have an early Shabbos minyan? How are we going to be machmir for the Magen Avraham? So he said, I didn't know the Magen Avraham. You know, like, so they quickly put together a minyan of people in order so that Rav Shechter should be able to have his early Shabbos minyan. Rav Shechter often likes to tell the story. It used to be in America in the middle part, early part of the last century, a lot of the Rabbanim were total amaratzim. There were a lot of Rabbanim that were giants, that were huge Talmidei Chacham and had no one to talk to. And there was no one in there. There were people living in like middle America somewhere that were writing Svarim and Shuvas and whatever, but there was no one to talk to. And then there were Rabbanim that were total amaratzim, but were good orators. They spoke very nicely, and they knew how to run a funeral and to say a funny line at a bar mitzvah or whatever it is. So Rav Shechter tells, it happens to be just a parenthesis on the parentheses. Rabbi Reisman said someone was once cleaning out his basement or something, and he found old journals, old Hapardes journals from like 1950 or something. And he brought he didn't know what to do with them, so he gave them to Rabbi Reisman. Rabbi Reisman was reading through. There's one issue of drushas from convention, some sort of rabbinic convention. So they published all the drushas that were given. And he said, it's so fascinating. He said, half the drushas were about America's a wasteland, and it's a midbar, and nothing's ever going to grow here, and there's no kashrus, and there's no Shabbos, and there's no taras hamishpacha, and there's no... And the other half of the articles were... we're starting to see something. We see hope. We see that we just built a mikveh in our community. There's a Talmud Torah that's starting. Torah Mesorah is coming. You know, like all with. He said, you know what the common link was between all of the drushes in the first category? You never heard of the rabbis who gave them. The drushes in the second category, with the hope and the positivity, those are the rabbis that were famous. Those are the ones, because if what you're selling is hopelessness and then everything, so you could be a big Talmud Chacham. He said, I'm sure they were great Talmud Chachamim, but they weren't going to leave an impact, right? The way that that people like Rav Aaron Cutler left an impact, the way that the Lubavitcher Rebbe left an impact, is because they believed that something could happen. The way that Rav Soloveitchik left an impact, that's why I think Tara Tversky said at one of the events commemorating Rav Soloveitchik, was that He had such emunah, not only in Hashem, but in Klal Yisrael, because he believed that it was an Ikar emunah that Klal Yisrael is going to be able to do tshuva, because the Rambam Paskin said that we're only going to have Mashiach when we do tshuva. So if you don't believe that Klal Yisrael is going to do tshuva, then you don't believe in Mashiach, and if you don't believe in Mashiach, you're an apikoros. So he just held that he wasn't an apikoros, so he held that Klal Yisrael is going to do tshuva. So no matter how terrible things were in Boston in 1930, whatever, he believed that you plant and it's going to grow. But anyway, so Rav Shechter tells a story about the Rav who got up it was an Erev Pesach Shechal B'Shabbos, so like this past year, and the rabbi got up and said, everyone should remember Erev Tavshilin. So it's ridiculous. There's no Erev Tavshilin when Erev Pesach is Chal on Shabbos. It's the other way. It's only, so the Shabbos of the Shul waited until everyone left. The Shabbos knew more than the rabbi. And he said, I don't think there's an Erev Tavshilin when Erev Pesach, you know, when Shabbos comes before Yantiv. So the rabbi said, no, there's a Shitas HaGra like that. Because he always knew that the Gra always had a different opinion. So he figured he's always safe to say the Shitas HaGra. There's obviously no Shitas HaGra. It's against the Gemara. It's against everything, right? Obviously. So the Meiri can be counted on sometimes for these unusual shitas. The Mishabrua in Hilchos Pesach in Simin Tafayin Gimel discusses how on the Ka'ara on Pesach we put a roasted zroa as a zechar for the Karban Pesach. Right, pretty common practice. And Mishabrua says, but make sure you roast it on the Erev Yom Tov. Why do you have to make sure you roast it on the Erev Yom Tov? Because you don't need it. You know, you're not allowed to eat it on the Seder night, right? Meaning it's also to eat roasted meat on the Seder night. See, if you roast it on Yantif, if you're roasting for no tzorich whatsoever, it's not a tzorich Yantif at all, so you're not allowed to roast it. So the Mishnah Berurah writes, and if you did roast it on Yantif, and you realize, oy vey, what did I do? Eat it the next day. Why does that help? What do you mean? I wasn't thinking about it. My wife's menu that she posts behind the plastic thing so that we don't violate reading menus on Shabbos or whatever. You know that it doesn't say roasted zroa in the lunchtime menu. There was all sorts of delicious things. Roasted zroa wasn't one of them. But Elamai, apparently, the Mishnah Berurah is saying that even though I'm only Mishnah Berurah writes im shachach v'tzala b'layla yizahar la'achlo l'machar b'boker. Ken kosov b'magin Avram. Kosov b'magin Avram. You roasted it with no plans on eating it. And it's a d'oraisa. So make a tzorech out of it. So eat it the next day. Rav Shechter, I know, is makbid that he does eat it the next day always. That he always eats the zroa the next day. Maybe I'll give one more example, and then we'll wrap it up. There are a lot of good examples to give, but maybe one more example, then we'll wrap it up. During Kriya Shema. You could still eat it the next morning. Shabbos day lunch. I mean the Yantif day meal. So there are lots of kavanas that a person is supposed to have during Kriya Shema. First of all, it's important to know. I put a little post-it in my siddur to remind me that Kriya Shema is a mitzvah d'oraisa. So we pass in Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Kriya Shema that mitzvah d'oraisa, mitzvah shrichas kavana. You need to have kavana to be yotzei the mitzvah. Unlike Sfiras Omer, that's where it comes up, where in Mitzvah Rabbanan ain't Sfiras Kavana, because by Sfiras Omer we know the famous halacha. Someone asks you, what night is it tonight? And you haven't counted yet, you're supposed to say, last night is. But if you tell them what night tonight is, you're not having Kavana to be Yotzei the Mitzvah. But apparently, Mitzvah ain't Sfiras Kavana, so that's how a number of the Yachronim say, that on Mitzvah Rabbanan ain't Sfiras Kavana. But Mitzvah Doraisa are Sfiras Kavana. Kriya Shema is Doraisa. So you're supposed to be thinking that I'm having Kavana to be Mekayim the Mitzvah Doraisa of Kriya Shema. There are a lot of other things you're supposed to be thinking during Kriya Shema as well. By Shem Hashem, Hayahov Aviyya, you're supposed to be Mekabal Ol Mach Shemayim. A number of the Acharim say Kabal Ol Mach Shemayim doesn't just mean that there is a God, but the Bach writes and the Chayyadim quotes it, that Kabal Ol Mach Shemayim means that I believe so strongly in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I'd be willing to give my life for him, which is something that, you know, is a much more intense kind of kavana. So when a person says creation, we're supposed to think all of these things. Echad, with the Aleph and the Ches, the seven Rukim and the Dal. So you're supposed to think a lot of different things during Kriya Shema. So a lot of times it's hard. It's hard to have all of those machshavos at the same time. Rabbi Chanuch Teller once asked me how I say Kriya Shema so fast. How do you have all those kavanos? You know, like he called me on the spot, Davin Meshul. He said, how do you say the first pasuk so fast? Just to have all the kavanos takes so long. I said, well, I'm very bright. I think very quickly, you know. But it's really, really hard to have all those kavanos at the same time. So what if you realize right after you said Shema Yisrael, Shema Kenesh, Shema Chad, right, you know, that as you're already into it already, that you didn't have kavana for mitzvah shichas kavana, to be mekayim the mitzvah daraisa. So Shlomo Zalman writes that retroactive kavana works. That even as you're saying Shema Yisrael Shem Elokeinu Shem Echad, and you're ready in via haftah, the later kavana could go back in time for the mitzvah. Now, if you hold mitzvah's kavana, if you don't have kavana in the moment, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. It's simply not a kiyum mitzvah. But apparently, Rav Shlomo Zalman holds that kavana afterwards. That yeah, when I said that, that was for the mitzvah. That's going to work to allow you to be mekayim the mitzvah. That's a huge chiddush because that should work. But he yelled that as long as you're osik ba'osu inyan, not like you could have a kavanah like 2 hours later, but you're still saying three parshiyos of Shema, so you're still osik in that inyan. It's like I said this morning in shul when I started the Daf Yomi Shir. I said that in our shul we said halal shalim without a bracha after davening. Right? That's what we did. That's what Rav Shechter told me to do many years ago. When we started the shul 20 years ago, that was the instruction I got from Rav Shechter. That's what we do. So it happens to be, it's Yom Yerushalayim, and it's also Monday. Anyone notice the Shir Shal Yom of Monday is all about Yerushalayim? The whole Shir Shal Yom is about Yerushalayim. So I said, you know, when I started the Dav Yomi Shir, right after davening this morning, I said, we said Hallel, but we also said Shir Shal Yom of Yom Sheni. So if you didn't say it slowly, Bekavana, go back and say it again, right? Meaning, it's Yom Yerushalayim. Appreciate Yerushalayim. Go look at what it says. Say the words again. Maybe you don't have to. Maybe you could just think, oh, retroactively. You know, now I know what that was about, right? That was about Yerushalayim. You should go back and say it again. It's a good thing to focus. It's a good thing to think every Monday when you say Shir Shal Yom. Think about Yerushalayim a little bit. Yeah. Okay. So. Let me just close with how this plays out in Machshava. There is a discussion. Ooh, I really got to go. There is a discussion about how to understand how Esav, already in the womb, was drawn to Avodah Zarah and Yaakov to the Beis Medrash, or how it could be that Moshe Rabbeinu was born in Smalei Abayis Kula Ora. Did that mean they didn't have Bechira Chavshes? I mean, Esav didn't have Bechira Chavshes, Yaakov didn't have Bechira, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have Bechira Chavshes. You know, there's a comment of the Tiferes Yisrael at the end of Maseches Kiddushin where he says that Moshe Rabbeinu really, by his nature, he was a bulvan of a guy, and he defeated his nature, or whatever. No one knows where that comes from. He made up a medrash, or whatever. It's meant to give chizik to people, maybe. But you would believe, we should believe, l'chora, that everybody has Bechira Chavshes. So what does it mean that Smalei Abayis Kula Ora? What does it mean that that there was this automatic, like it was already predetermined that Yaakov is running to a Beis Medrash, and Esav is running to a Beis Avodah Zarah? So there is a machshava that seems to have come out of Slobodka from Rav Victor Miller and Rav Huttner, that Hashem, being Lamala Min Azman, knew that Moshe would become Moshe. So the aura that filled the house was a retroactive koach in the Bria. It was retroactive. Avram Avinu fights the four Malachim, and he chases them ad Dan. And the Medrash says, "Kivan sheyigia sham tashash kocho sha'asidin ban of lahamid sham egel." That once he got to a certain location, he was weakened because eventually there was going to be the egel didn't happen. Klal Yisrael bechira chafshes to do an egel or not to do an egel. They had the ability to do it or not. In the days of Yeravam, there was going to be an egel there. That's 900 years, right? That's the egel. Not talking about the egel Azav, not the original egel Azav, the egel from the days of Yeravam. So 900 years later, there was going to be an egel that Yeravam was going to set up. But apparently, in the Olam Haruchni, there's what Rav Huttner refers to as an Or HaChozer. What Rav Miller refers to as a Bechira Lemafreya, that you have this concept that in the moment, yeah, you have Bechira Chavshes. But the Mafreya, it turns out that Bechira was flipped, that was somehow turned. I don't know how that works, nor do I know if it necessarily works in Halacha, but these are some of the examples of where maybe, you have this possibility of being Lamala Min Azman in Halacha, that a person could violate something that would seem to be an Avera, and then retroactively afterwards, they're able to fix it.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.